Good evening. Some people may be here for the first time. Is that true? Yeah, welcome. Yeah. Or second time. Okay. So we do some prayers, and we have this beautiful shrine room. We do some ritual. And it's important because in our understanding of Dharma, the truth, we're asked to be part of a journey. So the journey is actually quite simple to say. It's a journey from ordinary mind to extraordinary mind, or pure vision is called, and then back to ordinary. So we have to take to come back to really appreciating the ordinary world. We have to leave it to go to a special heightened world. We have to cross a threshold and go into a completely almost imaginal, fantastic world. And then we have to then bring that back to the ordinary world again. For those people maybe of my generation that were smoking weed and listening to music, like Donovan had this song called First There Are the Mountains, Then No Mountains, Then There Is. That's like from a Zen poem, right? So it means first ordinary world, then the ordinary world disappears and a kind of special world appears, and then you come back to the ordinary world again. But you come back with new eyes. So in our tradition, we have these kind of this kind of rhythm or momentum in our practice, which is a journey. Sometimes this journey is explained in what's called the three bodies, kayas. Bodies doesn't mean just physical body, but it means embodiment in the sense of three functional matrices, something like that. So generally we start with calling something the Dharmakaya, the truth body. The truth body is the complete open awareness, the completely unimpeded nature of our love and our knowledge and our activity. That's called the Dharmakaya, truth body. And then there's something called, fancy name, Sambhogakaya, which means enjoyment body. This is the imaginal body, that the world of imagination and bliss, and then finally the what's called Nirmanakaya, manifestation body. Some people have heard the Tibetan word tulku, which generally is translated kind of loosely as reincarnation, but we don't, I'll say something kind of radical. Actually, Buddhists don't believe in reincarnation, but we believe in manifestation, so, but I'll talk about that a little later. So the tulku means the manifestation body, which means you're all manifesting, right? A body, hope, see everybody still in their body, right? So we have those three. Yeah, so like that. So we have to journey through, start from, actually it starts at the Nirmanakaya, the ordinary world, and then we have to go through these different experiences that are split into, you know, for argument, discussion, split into two, Sambhogakaya and Dharmakaya, and then come back to Nirmanakaya. So we're leaving the ordinary world, we're in Sacramento, and then we go into special world of heightened awareness, and then we come back again to you know, Sacramento. So the ninth thing, I always thought, like, why am I here in Sacramento? This does not fit. I'm from this you know, kind of suburb of New York City, you know, doesn't, but it's ordinary here. It's a very ordinary place. It's fantastic. So really do deep Dharma practice, you want to be an entirely ordinary place, and then within that ordinariness, you create a special heightened world. And then you, in a way, you leave that world, but you bring part of it back to the ordinary workaday world. So it is a little bit like Wizard of Oz, actually. We have to go to Oz and come back and to appreciate Kansas. Anybody ever driven through Kansas? So, lots of times our Dharma practice feels actually like driving through Texas. So, one time I drove through Texas as the passenger for a part of it, and I fell asleep. And I woke up and it felt like I was in the same place. You know, you really... I had a good time in Texas. But, so to initiate this journey, we need to create this special situation of coming together, creating a temple, creating a mandala, you know, seeing ourselves in a special way so that we leave our incorrect attachment to ordinary reality. And then we go through some shift in awareness, and then when we come back, actually we see ordinary reality correctly. The funny part, we don't really see ordinary reality correctly. So when we come back, we actually see it. And it's a little bit like, too, you know, I like these older movies, obviously, but one that comes up in the holiday season is, you know, Jimmy Stewart. It's a Wonderful Life, you know. So everyone's seen it, right? Or maybe not, I don't know. But anyway, he's married with children. His bank fails, his savings and loan, and everything in the house is annoying, you know. Like, he goes up the banister and he picks up one of the pieces of the banister and comes off, you know, like, and he goes, ah, yeah, and he puts it back. But he goes through this transformation experience and of course, the angel and everything. But then coming back from it, when he kind of wakes up and comes back to our new reality, then the fact that the house isn't just right is just totally cool, right? He almost kisses it, right? You know, oh, it's great, I'm back, you know, it's fantastic. It's kind of screwed up in its own kind of fantastic way. So that's a journey movie also, you know, leaving what we think is ordinary but kind of conflicted and messed up, going through a transformative experience, but in coming back with new eyes. So to understand the Lotus Sutra, which is very much Sambhogakaya in many ways, very much this, and Dharmakaya, very much this fantastic world, we have to understand that structure of how we do this style of Dharma, this style of Buddhism. Some styles of Buddhism in Asia and in the West, kind of cut that the blissful imaginative part out. So it's just, and even some of the Dharmakaya, they just want to see ordinary reality correctly. And sometimes in the West, we just call this mindfulness-based practices. Like, we're not asking anybody to change their consciousness particularly. You know, just kind of behave better, be more mindful of what you're doing, right? So that's extremely helpful, but it's not going to be just paying attention to our sensate experience and just, I'm gesturing to somebody, come on in, yeah? So, you know, just paying attention to our experience is good, but it won't necessarily be transformative. I do want people to pay attention so they stay on their side of the street, right? And, you know, generally good citizens and aren't annoying or, you know, weird, violent, or hateful or something. But if we're just becoming more, a little bit more mindful and more gentle just with ordinary reality, we're not going to really have the energy and freedom and the love that's possible. That makes sense, right? But it does take some suspension of ordinary reality, in the sense that we're saying all the prayers with just a few exceptions in English, right? But when Tibetan monks are here, or our teachers or something, then we're going to do it in Tibetan, right? And there's going to be more ritual. There's going to be a bigger sense of, this can't be Sacramento. I'm not in Sacramento anymore, right? We want that experience to leave, but with the understanding that we're leaving to come back. That's the difference between a spiritual journey and just an escape. We're entering a different reality. We're heightening. We're changing. We're giving certain things up. We're going through certain initiations, which generally mean also giving something up. But the promise is to return. The Buddha promised to return to the palace after he discovered the truth. And he did. He didn't come back just to be a prince again, but he did come back. He promised Yashodhara that he would come back. She eventually became realized Arhat and head of the Sangha, along with his stepmother Maha Prajapati. So if we promise we'll come back, we can go through these special journeys, and we won't get lost, and we'll come back to benefit others. But if there's not a promise to get back, come back, there's not a promise to come back and benefit others, people do get lost in the funhouse sometimes. Isn't that so? I mean, people go on spiritual journeys or artistic journeys or psychological journeys, and they really don't want to come back. They just kind of want to sail out there. And we've all known people that haven't come back. Or they've come back pretty wounded, right? So in our tradition, we promise to come back. We come back to benefit others. And we create a situation so that people have something to come back to. That's called Sangha, right? We support people leaving, we wave goodbye, saying, we're okay, have fun, here's some provisions, we'll come visit, but we're also here when you come back. So I've known people that have gone on long retreats, become monks or nuns or yogis or hippies or whatever, but when they come back, there's no support system. So their re-entry into ordinary reality sometimes is not very pleasant. They may have gained some insights, but they don't really know how to use them. When you come back from, let's just say you come back down the mountain of transformative experience, you don't come with another guidebook of this is how to make it an ordinary reality. You think you would, right? You think you go to the top or something and you get 10 commandments or you get the truth, and then you also know how to get along with, the normals back in normal reality, right? You don't get that. You get the transformative experience so that you see yourself in a different way and you see the world in a different way, but you have to learn through interacting with others how to make it back in ordinary world again. The Buddha had his experience under what we now call the Bodhi tree, and first he had the idea this is profound. I'm just staying in the jungle. No one's going to get this, which really makes sense, right? Until God Indra said, there are a few people that might benefit. Stop being so selfish. So he walked to the deer park at Sarnath, but his fellow ascetics thought, he was a loser, right? So he had to learn how to present his truth that it didn't happen because he had the truth, and then here you guys, I got it, so shut up. It had to be an interactive rhythm. It had to be a dialogue, right? He had to find out, well, how do you guys understand what I'm saying? And did that make sense to you? And tell me what your experience is, and you know, all that. You don't just come back and say, well, this is where it is. He had to dialogue with people. So even after the transformative experiences of awareness and bliss, that doesn't mean you know how to like fix your computer, and it doesn't mean you know how to suddenly get along with your partner or get along with people. Is that profoundly disappointing? It should be a little disappointing. Like, well, what good is it? You know, but what you do come back with is more patience. You come back with what are called the paramitas, you know, the far-going attitudes. Sometimes we call them the perfections. You come back with generosity. You come back with, you know, the giving mind. You come back with, you know, discipline and ethics and patience. First you have generosity and patience, and then you come back with some discipline, you come back with energy, you come back with meditation, you come back with wisdom. But you still don't have, you know, this cookie cutter thing of what you're supposed to do. You have to still work with us fellow bipeds and say, you know, is this working for you? And I'm trying to be patient here, and I don't feel very patient now, or we could say, or you know, whatever. You have to dialogue with people. There's no kind of, this is in our tradition, you have to be experientially connecting with people to find out what they want and need. We have a general idea. Everybody wants to be free and happy. But everybody wants to be fed when they're hungry, but some people are going to like, you know, spaghetti, some people like sushi, some people like gelato, some people like cannoli, you know? So you have to ask, right? But because you have this imagination and you have the patience and flexibility and the spaciousness from these profound transformations, you're willing to hang in there and, you know, find out, well, what do you like to eat? What do you like to do? What's your particular way I can present the truth to you? So generally, we Buddhists don't like to tell you what to do, except do more practice. You know, we want you to do the journey. We want you to, you know, go to Oz or whatever and come back. But we're still going to say you have the tools now, and please, we'll help you figure it out. But you've got to also figure it out. So in that sense, Buddhism is not a regular religion. You know, it's not a revealed religion in the way that, you know, like a superior being has said, this is the way it is. It's like spiritual psychology or sacred psychology or humanistic religion that way. Because even when we've had profound experiences where you can say, I've met God, I've seen emptiness, I've seen a billion worldviews, you know, I've met millions of Buddhas or all the things you see in the Lotus Sutra, well, we're still in Sacramento, isn't that so? Yeah. But then we have a vision and we have the energy to, you know, transform. We have the energy to help others. So maybe I can stop here for a minute and we can have a discussion. Or as I like to say, comments or complaints. Usually it's in the past, I'd have one person who'd raise their hand and say, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know what happened to that person, you know. I have to go out, you know.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. Imagination is hard won, isn't it? Yeah, we have to stretch and experiment and dialogue with these different aspects of the world and of ourself. You know, it's not just revealed. So that for me is always fascinating. That's the difference between what we do and, you know, just tell me the truth kind of approaches, whether they're scientific or psychological or religion. You know, we're not, we are saying certain prayers that point to things, but that finger is not the moon, is it? Finger is not the finger either in our school, but yeah. Zizi, Susan, and then Annette,
so
yeah.
If you come back with patience, you can have
Well, that's a good question. It actually doesn't add up to wisdom. Wisdom, in a sense, is the result of doing the paramitas in the practice. In the other sense, it of course is the driving force between all of them, because you can't really have real patience without wisdom. So in our tradition, the ground of being is wisdom. We start with wisdom. We have the energy to pursue and to wake up through wisdom, and wisdom's at the end also. So, you know, we have a little picture of the Arya Bhagavati Prajnaparamita in the prayer book there. The technical name of the sutra is Arya Bhagavati Prajnaparamita Hridaya Sutra, the Noble Lady Prajnaparamita Heart Discourse. So we have a little bit of goddess religion, wouldn't you say? So the mother principle is very important. That's a whole other lecture, but like wisdom, she's all pervasive. She's here at the beginning, and we come forth, and then we return to her. So it suffuses everything, but isn't just a collection of things. Maybe that wasn't your question, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we have to go looking for it, you see. So the journey is we really do have to seek it. It will come looking for us, you know, so that's one of the strong pieces of, you know, the Christianity and Judaism too. I can't speak to Islam so much, but, you know, God will come looking for us. So the Dharma, the truth will come looking for us, but we also have to come looking for it too. It's not a passive situation, you know, it's kind of, gosh, I was looking for you, and, you know, it feels like some kind of Shakespeare play, or maybe Midsummer Night's Dream, you know, they're running around looking for each other. So we have to go looking for it. And basically, once again, Buddhists like threes for some reason, but the first thing is recognition. So when we recognize the nature, ultimate nature of things, is, you know, when we're prepared, we'll recognize it because it's there. Okay. then the second thing, so that's, you know, and we say that's like Dharmakaya, we recognize. So the second, the Sambhogakaya, is the it's the expression of, it's the creative expression of beauty and bliss. And then the third, the Nirmanakaya, is expression of gratitude and generosity. So it always goes like that in our tradition. You know, we see the nature, and then, which is kind of just, we're actually dumbfounded. So the actual seeing part is where there's, it's not that you go blank, but it's indescribable. You cannot kind of go, well, that's nice, you know. No, you're flattened. You're just flattened, you know. So so when it's open to you. So if people chatter on about their experience of emptiness, I go, well, sorry, you know. Because you can't describe it. You come to a complete, you run out of, you've rolled to a stop, as I said, but also maybe this is kind of like, you're just dumbstruck. But then something kicks in because it's rhythm, and there's a expression of appreciation, and then there's a real flowering, and then the interaction of those two is going to develop this intense gratitude and compassion and confidence. Anything that arises is the nature of your own being. How could anything harm you, you know? Really nothing to be afraid of, right? But, we have to have that experience of recognition, appreciation, which is the artistic, imaginal world, and then the active expression, you know, which, takes place with, generosity and gratitude and compassion. There's extreme, that outpouring of energy, which is very unstoppable. But it kind of goes like that, you know. So you can build up to it, but we can kind of prepare ourselves for a visionary experience, but it's still somewhat of a mistake. You know, you can't like produce it. It's already there, so you can't produce it anew, you know. So there's a phrase kind of in Dzogchen, like, it's so deep you can't measure it. It's already present, so you can't attain it anew. You know, you can't say, well, that's why we say in Heart Sutra, you can't, you know, there's no attainment, no non-attainment. We're not saying there's not a realization, but it's not an attainment because it's already there. You've already been given it. It's already present, you know. So there is a sense of gift, like you really just go, wow, you just, so that is a, you know, when people have, I'm just going to say normative, when you have genuine religious experience, it's an enormous amount of humility and gratitude. You don't go around going, I just figured something out, you know. That's, it doesn't work that way. That means you maybe had an experience, right? Experiences can be very like, wow, I'm smart, you know. And that's not necessarily bad if you've been walking around thinking you're stupid, but experiences are not realizations, because realizations are this, they last, and you reintegrate them, and, generally they're going to be, it's kind of sheepish, like, you know, this is really just too simple. I should have known this earlier. It's like that. You had a question.
I was going to have you clarify on that. I thought you said something about Buddhists don't believe in reincarnation, they believe in manifestation. Is that what you said or not?
Yeah, that's what I said, yeah. It has to do with manifesting. You know, we usually think someone dies and then they come they come back into, like a new body, like Dracula or something, right? Okay. So when we each have our own individual mind stream, you see, actually. But if we have a very strong practice, our individual mind stream, our compassion, our wisdom, will connect with a new birth, you see. And we'll add our inspiration to that new birth. So each incarnation, we shouldn't use that word, but each manifestation of Dalai Lama is a different person. So that's what's interesting. But the force of the compassion of the person prior to it is welcomed and joined by the new awareness, you see. It's like very. How does it work? Well, Avalokiteshvara is, you know, the energy of compassion. So that compassionate energy each time connects with a new life. I don't know why I'm talking about this, but so many people are confused about it. You know, they think you're just kind of like Dracula. You're just kind of getting a new body each time. No, you know. So what's interesting is that you so our energy, our love and compassion can inspire this new life, but we go on too, you know. It's not like we die into the new person again, you know. So it's like light rays. It can hit a crystal and keep going through it, right? You know, the light hits the refractory, and then so that's why we can have the metaphor of Indra's net. It's called where everything is a jewel and a kind of floating like a net. This, you know, and each facet of the jewel reflects the other facet. This was, you know, one of the realizations. But we're not Draculas, you know. We're each individual people, and that's the thing is we inspire. We can actually inspire a new life, you see. But also we have our own refractory, so we can keep traveling too. It's very interesting. Easy. Hi, Eric. Yes.
I have a friend who just celebrated her birthday of 40 years of sobriety. And you mentioned getting flattened, and just wanted to share the experience she shared with me. She got together with three of the people, the women she sponsors, and a friend of hers who has 42 years of sobriety. And the friend with more sobriety gave her a birthday card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when I saw her, about 5 weeks later, she said her chest was open.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a physical sensation in the chest. And I thought of that when you mentioned
flattened. Just, yeah, it's flattened in a good way. We're just kind of like, oh, yeah, like that. Oh, yeah. Hi. Yeah, I know. I'm looking right at you. I love that color. Yeah, thank you. Well, hardly, but thank you. Anyway. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, a lot of times there are different colors. yes. Well, there are different colors depending upon different activities too. So there's, you know, whether you're interested in generating certain emotions or certain skillful means like that. So, you know, sometimes, you know, simple things sometimes is like the truth body is just clear light. So sometimes it's shown as white, you know, if you're just seeing white flag, but it's meant to be just clear, like this space is clear, right? you know, this is kind of just white, clear light. And then sometimes the, you know, Sambhogakaya is called enjoyment body, is sometimes red, you know, because, you know, passion and, you know, energy and blood and red, you know, and then sometimes the emanation body or, you know, can be like gold or green or something like that, that, you know, particularly you're pointing to something, but it, green's activity like that. So what colors are there? What is?
This tonga.
Yeah.
It looks like, you know, it's all rainbow color. Gold and green and red and...
Yeah. That's a little bit different, but yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's always... we're always trying to express the inexpressible, right? So, so like the complete spontaneous quality of awareness, the complete unsubstantiality of awareness is like a rainbow. Briefly, like the most common iconography or typology is called the five Buddha families. So you have, you know, five colors that are kind of primary, like white and or blue and black and green and yellow and red. And then the rainbow body, like this, there's a manifestation of Padmasambhava on a cloth tonka in the back, you know, it's like, it isn't so much the colors, but the complete, the unity of form, manifestation, and complete openness at the same time. We're just stunned when we see something that is manifest, but is not fixated, you know, that is completely an open thing. So that's briefly, that's why that's what we're trying to portray in the artwork, even though it's kind of flat in some occasions, you know, is the completely the open dimension of form just blows us away, because we usually see things as solid. Yes. Like an insight? I mean, insight, like rainbow body be an insight, or? Like just so I bracket a little bit, like everything I say could be said another way. So it is like, usually even you know, profound experiences have to be deepened and appreciated and integrated, you know, with another human being, because they're too charged. So we can call them realizations, but they're still, you know, profound experiences that still need to, you know, be made real. See, the Buddha was very lucky on his way to Sarnath, the deer park. He met a few people, and, you know, a merchant, I think, and the merchant said, "Who are you?" He said, "I'm the Tathagata," and the merchant said, "Whatever." And then he met the ascetics, and they thought he was full of it. This is very important. I've got to emphasize that after deep experiences, there's also a big inflation of one's misperceived self, normally called our ego, right? So you need that super duper person or teacher. It could be just an ordinary person, like a merchant or something, to say, oh, that's nothing so special. You know, to remember.